Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, friends and family of Sex with Simmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Simmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithsimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Simmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Simmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithsimmery. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I'm very excited for today's guest. For no other reason than because she's awesome, but because also her job title is professional naked person, which is pretty much like the greatest job I've ever heard of other than this one. So I would like to introduce to you Isabel Wren. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here.
So when you say professional naked person, does that require like a lot of training? Like how does one get into that sort of
rigorous
thing?
Rigorous training? It's like the Olympic hopefuls. No, I have sort of bounced around to a bunch of different things in the adult industry. I've done fetish work and webcam work. I've done glamour modeling, nude modeling, all sorts of things. So eventually I just said, well, I can't really describe myself as an actress or a model or anything. So I'm a professional naked person.
So what led you down that path? Because like, you're obviously like, you fit the bill for all of the like tick, tick, tick for aesthetics, but not everybody goes that route.
I was in college, it was in undergrad, and someone advertised like in the back of this sort of skanky city paper that they were looking for models. And I thought, oh, well, I could do that to get some college girl money, as they say. I showed up to the shoot and it was a naked fetish bondage shoot. And I really expected that I would feel scandalized and horrible and I would run away and go home. But while I was there, sort of trying to decide whether or not to do it, because clearly they didn't say that was what it was for in the magazine, I kind of went, you know, you're only scandalized because you think you should be, because you feel like you have to be. And I did it, and it was really fun, and I had a good time. Then I thought, well, if that guy would pay me to do it, let's see if other people would pay me to do it. It's really a fun job. So I just kept doing it.
So once you launch into that, like how difficult is it to find another person to pay you? Like, do you just go back to the classifieds again? Or like, is there, you know, like a network that you tapped into?
The miracle of the internet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are several websites. I'm sure people listening to this podcast know about FetLife. Yeah. And there's also Model Mayhem. At the time, One Model Place was really big. Not so much anymore, because I've been doing this for like 10 years. Oh my God, that's forever. So, yeah, I just put up a portfolio of pictures. I started networking with people. People contacted me. I contacted them. I did a lot of traveling. It's just like any other artistic job. I think over time you build your network of contacts. So you do more and more projects. I've done all sorts of exciting things. So that's been really fun. Magazines and videos and stuff.
What are some of your favorites? Like the ones that you look back on as being like particularly memorable?
Let's see. My favorite personal project was the Buck Naked Book Review. where I reviewed a book while stripping.
So, what was the book?
Oh, all kinds. I've done many now. I stopped doing them when I started back up in grad school because I just don't have the time to do that anymore. But I think I did, gosh, I'm trying to think of some of my favorite books. I did Stranger in a Strange Land. I did The Phantom Toll Booth. That was actually really interesting. The book reviews, I put them primarily on YouTube. So it was a really interesting exercise in sort of sex policing and internet sex negativity. I put up videos that I didn't get actually naked because A, you can't do that on YouTube, and B, always leave them wanting more. And I would put up things where I was in my underwear, which is less nudity than many, many people were putting up. But my videos got taken down or flagged as inappropriate all the time because I am a porn star, evil porn star. So if I were other people, it wouldn't have happened.
So I'm confused. Like, somebody just, like, came across it and they flagged it because of who you are, but they had to know who you are because they consume that media. Because you don't know porn stars by sight unless you are a consumer of a lot of porn.
Exactly.
What the fuck?
Exactly. They would... I was open in my videos about, hey, I'm Isabel Wren, I'm doing this, that, or the other thing, and today we're reviewing this book. So people seeing that in there would be horribly offended because, you know, porn stars shouldn't exist aside from when you aside from when you want to jerk off to them. Then we should just disappear.
Like, that's a thing that really troubles me a lot. There was a video that I saw recently, and so I think it's Jimmy Kimmel does a thing where it's like actors and athletes and whoever read mean tweets that were sent to them. And it's funny because it's like, you know, it's Amare Stoudemire, it's like, you know, Tina Fey, it's like famous people who it's like, they're not really going to be hurt by this, but they make, you know, they're like, make a sad face because somebody called them a mean thing on the internet. And it's like, it's funny. But then they did one that was all porn stars, and really actually quite sad because it's like all of the negative comments, like, aren't funny. They're just like, for the most part, especially the ones that are leveled towards the women, are just really sex negative.
Yes.
And it's like, why are you tweeting at a porn star? Mm-hmm. Like, why do you know that porn star's fucking name unless you are going to look for it? And what is your problem with yourself?
Exactly.
That you feel like you need to, like, do this lashing out. It's so bizarre. Like, people, like, this like, self-judgment, but that seems to also be sustaining the industry. So I don't know, like, what can you even do with that?
Yeah. I think some amount of shame, not necessarily shame, but, like, titillating kind of, ooh, this is naughty. Shame is sexy and is useful and, you know, keeps me in business because if I'm one of the few women who is willing to do it, not that there are only, like, 10 of us, there are thousands of us, but then that's something that is, as I just said, sexy and fun and keeps me employed. I think when you go over the top, you go over that, you start to pathologize things, and that gets kind of sad, scary, dangerous, other negative adjectives in there. but I think doing the cam work, which is primarily what I do these days, I see a lot of that. Just people who have been taught, because I don't think we are instinctively ashamed of our sexuality. You know, you see kids who are like, hey, this is cool, this feels good. Not that I'm looking at kids doing anything, but...
But if you've ever met a little kid, then you know how they are. They run around naked, and they play with themselves until they're told not to.
Yeah, kids are not ashamed. We learn to be ashamed. And I see so many people who I've started to think dehumanize the object of their desire. You can be turned down by the object of your desire. So you develop this angry kind of self-protective relationship towards it in one aspect because, you know, the sex relations between people. You know, men are pigs, women are crazy. You know, you denigrate the thing that can hurt you, that you're afraid of. And at the same time, you dehumanize the thing that you want, because then there's not an actual person looking at your shame. There's not an actual person viewing you being vulnerable, doing something that you're not supposed to do, doing something that you don't feel good about yet or anything like that.
And also sort of that instantly reminded me of like the dudes that like, they like spit some game when you're walking by, and then if mm-hmm. you don't go for it, like, fuck you anyway, you're ugly, oh my God, blah, blah, yeah. blah. And it's like, yeah, that's not what you thought four mm-hmm. seconds ago. Mm-hmm. Seems like a bit of a reaction formation, buddy. Let's go back into our Freudian coping mechanisms books and talk about what you're feeling right now, friend. Are you feeling mm-hmm. a little bit sad?
Let's put some psychodynamics on there. How did your mother tell you she loved you?
So you mentioned you're going into grad school, you're in grad school, and you're doing a little bit of a career change. Like, mm-hmm. what is the merger of those two lives like? How do you, or the compartmentalization, or how do you manage that?
That is something that I have been struggling with the whole time I've been in school. As I mentioned earlier, people want cam stars, porn stars to disappear when they're done jerking off to them. You know, it's that whole rhetoric of you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. We don't want you here, but we don't want you to do anything else afterwards. You know, you see all of that, you know, Stacey Hollis, who was fired from her teaching job because she had been a porn star. And then there was a guy who was a gay porn star who was fired from his job. That kind of stuff happens all the time. It's like, well, if you don't want us to do what we're doing now, we should get another job.
Make it possible to exit that field then. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's another case recently. The hashtag is I Stand With Lottie, and mm-hmm. she's a school teacher who does some burlesque in the DC area.
That's right, yeah.
And she mm-hmm. lost her job. And the irony was that before somebody stumbled across her videos, they were getting, you know, like 75 views, because it's like a DC area burlesquer. She's not famous. She's just doing this artistic thing on the side. Yeah, well, some concerned parents who just happened to be looking for burlesque videos mm-hmm. on the internet stumble across her and recognize her. And then all of a sudden they have like 10,000 views because they're sharing it. Now is drawing attention to it. Mm-hmm. Before, the kids never would have known. And now they do. And it's like this super ironic thing. So now she can't do her job anymore that mm-hmm. she was super good at and passionate about. And she's no longer helping those kids. And those parents get to feel self-righteous about the fact that they like watch burlesque, but also judge it.
Well, and also that the spheres didn't affect each other.
No.
You know, the fact that she dances burlesque has nothing to do with her capabilities as an educator. So that to me has been something that is difficult in the, well, how, you know, I am not ashamed of what I do. I'm really happy that it's been a great job. It's been perfect for me. You know, I am a businesswoman, la la la. But I get nervous about it because other people would judge it. And I can be as happy with myself and comfortable in what I do as I want. But if anybody else who would give me a job is not, then it doesn't matter what I think about it.
It's not just for people who are in the sex work and adult services spectrums at all either. Because first of all, I mean, there is the argument, like, there's no reason that like underage kids should ever come across the work anyway, you know? So even if the two things somehow affected each other, like, we have a compartmentalization. Like, mm-hmm. teenagers shouldn't be in venues where these things are happening.
Right.
So their teacher should be free to go do whatever. But we don't even let teachers necessarily even have a picture of them drinking a beer on their Facebook profile. So this is, like, everybody. This isn't mm-hmm. even necessarily just sex. So it's also that idea that, like, I was listening to a story today about a woman who was fired because her work phone has what is essentially like a tracker on it So it knows where she is and like how long she's taking stops and stuff. And
Holy moly.
Yeah. And she would turn it off when she wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And her boss was upset about that. And she was like, yo, I'm not on house arrest. You don't need to know. But he's like, this is your work phone. And she's like, but it's my phone. That's part of the deal. That's part of my pay. So like, and she lost. Like, she lost the suit. So it's like, this is everybody, this compartmentalization of like, are you allowed to be a human being and also have a job? Like, mm-hmm. are you capable of being a person and also an employee? And then a woman, especially.
Oh,
are you capable of being a competent adult woman without being covered head to toe?
Yeah, a woman, especially a sexually liberal woman, and also, you know, gay men, I think, have a difficult time with that as well. You know, if you're out about it.
The whole, yeah, everybody has a fucking opinion. So but, in your work now, how are you managing it? Like, what is it looking like?
Well, how am I managing it? I do my work. I am actually...
Like, are you out to people at school?
I was. And then I ran into a whole bunch of people who were not cool about it.
Mm.
Actually, someone wrote the dean of the department.
Whoa.
Yes. A letter saying that they were uncomfortable that I was in school with them, that my talking about my work, which I didn't actually, I just said, oh yes, in my experience with clients, you know, I'm not talking about, oh yeah, I know Rick and he's got this gigantic schlong or anything. I was just saying, I've noticed that, you know, men can have a hard time communicating about this kind of thing. So we should maybe do this to make them more comfortable, things like that, you know? So just the fact that this person knew that my examples came from sex work and not clinical work in sexuality upset them enough that they needed to, instead of talking to me about it or anything, talk to the dean. And the dean actually called me in and said, hey, so people have raised complaints and there's a lot of religious people in this program. You're making them uncomfortable. Tone it down.
Whoa. Yeah. Interesting. That's interesting about how if you have a religious objection to something, like, okay, there's like a line in Orange is the New Black, and it's like Pencil Tucky, and she's saying like something about, you know, you have to tell everybody that you're Christian because then nobody can hurt your feelings because that's against the law. And it's like, this is perfect. This is perfect.
Oh my God. Because, you know, they're persecuted against and all.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you can't even be a Christian anymore. It's, you know, all of the churches have been shut down now that they've all been taxed to death and like they're constantly at risk of like violence in the streets. It's the worst.
Yep.
Again, not to say we have a problem with Christianity, but it's certainly not a persecuted class.
Well, and I mean, I count myself as a Christian, so, and that's something that shocks people.
That is interesting. Yeah. Okay. So what's that combination like?
I don't think that God is ashamed of our bodies. We are constantly hearing, the clitoris is the only organ that is solely designed for pleasure. So why the fuck do we have it? So, you know, God being the omniscient being who does everything for a reason and all of that, why would the supreme being make our bodies and then say, yes, I did that as a trap? That's like Admiral Akbar there. It's a trap. Clitoris, it's a trap.
This show just got so nerdy. I love it.
So I think that God's chief concern is, you know, Bill and Ted, be excellent to each other, be excellent to yourself, and don't have shame. I keep coming back to shame, I know, but that's
That's a thing.
It's a thing. It's a big thing. Shame and work rights, I think, are big issues in adult industry and sex work. You know, other people's shame, forcing people to feel shamed, rights of women to use their own bodies, and rights to work.
Yeah. Before we go into the rights thing, because I definitely want to delve into that, just on the Christianity piece, I have heard people say, and I'm just curious if your experience is anything like this, I've heard people say that it was actually, for instance, someone who is both gay and Christian, that they have had a harder time in some cases coming out as Christian to their gay friends than as gay to their Christian friends now, not necessarily before. But
interesting.
That was just that was a couple people's experiences to whom I've spoken. How is it for you about being out as a Christian in, or are you out as a Christian? That's another question I should ask.
I wonder if it has to do with expectations. You know, when you are LGBT and you go to tell a Christian person, you expect that they're going to be upset about it in some kind of way, so you build yourself up for that. But to tell your far more liberal friends, hey, by the way, I believe in, you know, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, I expect that you would think, oh yeah, whatever, they'll be fine with that. And so when they react in a like kind of way, that you're not prepared for that. But anyway, that's just my theorizing bit. I guess it doesn't really come up that often unless there's a discussion about Christianity, sort of as we just sort of fell into. And then people are sort of surprised and kind of go, oh, how does that work? Sometimes I have men, photographers chiefly, will respond sort of negatively to that, as in a, like, how do you justify showing your naked ass to people when you're a Christian? And I'm kind of going, well, you're photographing my naked ass for one, so hypocrite.
And these photographers identify as Christian?
I just assumed that they did, because why would they be upset otherwise?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
To me, it was just you are showing your own sex negativity, and you're talking more about you than you're talking about me. If you think what I'm doing is wrong, then that says more about you.
Well, there's also religion has been used as a tool to be specifically sex negative about women's sexuality. Like, yes, there's a lot of people who use religion to make the argument that men can do a lot more.
True.
So maybe they're just coming from that shitty school of thought.
Yep. And I have discarded a whole bunch of the teachings that I've grown up with to get to the point where I am. So I definitely see people who, you know, go more whole hog on, hey, this is what my pastor or someone told me the Bible is about, being more sex negative and being more surprised that about my religion. So, yeah.
So then I want to get back to the rights piece. You specifically use the term right to work. What do you mean by that?
I mean the ability to make a decision about how you are going to use your own body to make your money. I know a lot of sex work activists have talked about, you know, people say, oh, you're selling your body, you know, and well, there are parallels, you know, construction workers sell their body, other people, nurses sell their labor, their time, their emotional energy. Everyone sells their body in some kind of way. Why is what I do not a legitimate way to sell my body? You know, you can sell your labor, you can sell your time, you can sell your emotion, you can sell your brain. But when I do it, because I'm one of them little women's and stuff, and probably other things too, but patriarchy, no, that it's not legit when I do it.
I think about that, like, a fair amount. Like, why why is it classified categorically as different type of work?
Yeah.
Like, what is it about it? Is it because it's fun? I wonder about that. I wonder if like you're not allowed to have fun at your job. And that's like this underlying, maybe it's like
everybody jelly.
Yeah. Maybe it's just like thirsty haters who are like, I really like fucking. I wish I got paid to fuck. Like, hate you. In the same way that, like, you know, the salty dudes are like, oh, she's not going to go down with me. Well, she's ugly anyway. You know, like that same kind of like, I didn't want it. I never wanted that trophy anyway. That trophy's stupid.
You're not my ugly mom. I want my real dad.
So in terms of like CAM, which is more what you do now, like what is the economic situation right now? Because it seems like that was definitely like the direction things were going. Is it still what's happening?
I don't know real research statistics these days. It's really, really hard to get CAM websites to share their data. Probably people are scared of things going the way of Ashley Madison. And also, I wouldn't want to share my financial data with someone unless they could guarantee me that there was some kind of research value. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. I love research.
These are valid concerns, yeah.
I think that CAM is very, very popular because everyone wants... Well, making broad generalizations, everyone wants intimacy. They want to feel special. I think a lot of people want to know or want to be ethical porn consumers, if that doesn't sound strange. It might sound strange. And want to know that the woman who is helping them is actually there on her own accord and is actually having a good time. You have a little bit more guarantee of that when you're there with her on CAM and you can see something that's live. You know, she's catering directly to you. You can get feedback and ask questions, ask her to change things up a little bit. It's speaking to, I think, the personalization of porn. And we, at least Americans and younger Americans at least, really like personalization, really like to be unique and to have something, have experiences that are shared with other people. So I see camming having become more popular just in this short time that I've done it, in the couple of years that I've done it, and I expect that it will become ever more popular and take up a larger and larger space of the porn that people pay for.
Will it make it harder to make a living when there's a bigger portion of the industry that is focused on that?
Well, I mean, that does make sense economically, you know, the supply and demand kind of thing.
Well, if the demand keeps increasing with it, I mean, then it will be sustainable.
True. I could not answer that scientifically. I know that it feels like it is harder some days to make money. And me and my CAM girlfriends have all developed different ideas for why that is. You know, some girls say, oh, well, it's a cheap labor coming from overseas. You know, it's the CAM equivalent of them illegal stole my jobs, you know. But so there's that, which is maybe an argument, maybe not. Then that there are more people doing it, that the sites keep cutting rates to try and bring more consumers in. And so there's a lot of pressure from CAM girls to continue to drop your rates, which to me is another really interesting right to work and workspace earning kind of issue. In a freelance economy, whether it's Uber or Lyft or freelance design or camming, there is no solidarity. There's no way for the workers to say, hey, I'm only making 35% of my earnings, which is what you typically make on a really large campsite. You know, that $5 a minute, I get 35% of that. So just sort of not great. Anyway, distracting myself. So there's no worker solidarity. There's no way to say, hey, let's protest this, which is a huge failing, I think.
Has there been anything you've ever heard of where people were able to make some sort of structural change, like to either like move en masse from one site to another or to raise complaints to ownership, anything like that? Have you heard of anything successful or even just attempted?
I personally have not. There are a lot of cam girls sort of jumping from one site to another if the site offers a better deal temporarily or permanently. But just in general, there's not a lot you can do. Many of these sites don't even answer their emails when you send them support, asking for support or anything, because, again, just like any other freelance thing, you are a cog. You don't want to work for 35%, someone else will. It's disposable. And we can't even really write any public opinion pieces and sort of start advocating on social media because nobody wants to talk about it. Mm. It's always for the adult industry is for titillation or condemnation.
So you mentioned the concept of an ethical consumer of adult services. So if someone is on that side, is there anything they can do to help?
You know, I never really thought about getting the consumers involved. That's a really cool idea.
Okay. I feel like, you know, like the cam girls I've talked to, they tend to have people who are pretty fiercely loyal to them, mm-hmm. and who are willing to do a great deal, like who send large quantities of money and presents and those sort of things. It seems like a natural alliance, mm-hmm. because it's like these are people you forge relationships with. Yeah. And like, do you feel like you have folks who would have your back if you were...
Yeah.
Brought up a rallying cry?
I think I have people who would to an extent, because we do have personal relationships with people. You know, I have people who I think about when I'm not camming and who I'm like, oh, I wonder what he's doing today. And it's an interesting space having sort of almost a paid friend who you do sexual things with, which I think is an interesting and new thing about camming that we really don't see anywhere else. But I do think that they would help, but I don't know if it would make a big enough difference, if they would be willing to go far enough. I think perhaps the limited nature of that relationship would make people go, oh, okay, you know, I've done two things, that's enough, when five things is what is needed.
Do you have any recommendations for when someone is just looking to be a consumer in general, what they can do to be a more ethical consumer?
In general, I would say, well, first of all, this seems super simple, but be kind. Hmm. You know, the person who is making what you are consuming is just that. They are a person, and treat them like you would any other person. I wouldn't say, you know, treat them like your mom's watching, because that might make things awkward. But, you know, as though word might get back to other people in your real life. So be kind, understand that time is time, time is money. Compensate people fairly for their time.
What does that mean? Because, like, if somebody is new, they may not know what that means.
Right. Yes. Good point. Well, cam sites, on most big box cam sites where you could go to see someone, the women set their own rates. So you would pay her rate, and I find a lot of people will come to me and say, well, you know, you'll do it for this much, would you do it for less? Or, as you were talking about earlier, you know, people who are jealous and go, well, I do this for free, why don't you do it for free? Because this is my job, because I'm awesome, that's why. I was smart enough to get this as a job. But so, you know, pay her rates. Understand that there is a little bit of negotiation in some kinds of things. Like, I know some sex workers who are escorts and fetish workers and things will negotiate a little bit on the rates, but you know, if she says my rate is $100 an hour, don't go, how about 25? You know, if 100 really is a stretch for you, then ask her if she'll do 75, kind of thing. So be respectful of her limits in her rates. And I'm using her because, you know, I only have experience as a female worker, so I couldn't presume to say what the male workers are doing. And tipping. Tip her for a job well done. You tip your waitress, you know.
Yeah. Or, I mean, if there's anything in terms of, like, sites that you recommend over ones that you would not. Ooh, or, right. You know, places that, you know, people get treated better consistently. We've had folks on here talk about their modeling experiences, like a certain site that like has been really unethical with the use of their images. And, you know, we've had like suicide girls get called out a few times for the way that they will take images and then sell them to other sites that are not, you know, just alt modeling, that sort of thing. So do you have any suggestions in terms of like that?
Let's see. I work off of StreamMate primarily, and they have had some faltering times in the past with not answering support emails and things. But you know, lately they've done right by me. So aside from only making 35% off of there, they're a pretty good site. I think your comments on this are going to be filled with cam girls going, "What, you idiot," or something. I do a lot of work off of Night Flirt as well, and they've always been really cool, and they actually have a better share than StreamMate. A lot of my friends work off of Extra Lunch Money, which is first and foremost a really cool name, but they say that they really like that site. It works off of this really interesting token system where you have to get tokens and share them out, and you bid on them. You say, oh, I have this thing. You, the consumer, says, I have this thing I think I would like to see, and the models will bid on, I would do that for this amount of money or whatever, which I think is really innovative. That's the only place I've seen it. I'm lazy, though, so I'm just like,
I know they use a token system on my free cams as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I cannot keep up with my free cams. That shit is a lot of work, so I couldn't tell you if they're good or not. A friend of mine once said, it's like entertaining a whole bunch of kindergartners with erections. Because you have to just be entertaining and innovative and fun and sexy all the time. I don't have that kind of energy. I want to hang out and talk to my guys, and I'm really more of a one-on-one kind of energy person. I will devote all my time and all my energy to you, you know, but I can't do a room full of 20 guys yelling at me.
Yeah, it's a very, I mean, that's a very different job. I mean, that's
totally different.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's almost the difference between like working the pole versus champagne room, like that kind of, like, yeah, that's a very different skill set.
That's a really good parallel. And it goes to show that there are so many different types of jobs that you can do. You know, we tend to say, oh, the adult industry, or oh, camming, or oh, sex work. It's not a monolith. It's all very different, very specialized, very interesting things, I think.
So if somebody wants to go find out more about you, they want to go make use of your services, where shall we direct them?
Well, I've been terrible lately with my website since I started school. It is not currently updating, but I do have a website, and you can read my FAQs and contact me through that. It's isabelwren.com. It's spelled exactly like my name. I am most easy to find, I think, on social media, though. I am obsessed with Twitter.
Anything else that you think people should know, who are either maybe like thinking about going into this, or, you know, just contemplating in general?
For people who are thinking about going into any kind of adult work, I would say be really thoughtful and deliberate about it. Through the course of my career, I've met so many people who just didn't plan what they wanted to do and didn't think about what their limits were and quickly ran out of work or exceeded their limits. then had a negative experience and felt bad about what they do. And sexuality is very important to people, and it is super personal and integral, which is, you know, potentially the reason that we get judged so much in this industry. You know, we're making something very private, public, and very personal, also public. So it is important to think about that, to stick to your limits, and to know that there is this sex negative stigma out there, and one day you will potentially not want to continue to do this. God bless you if you end up being Nina Hartley and just doing it for the rest of your life. That would be amazing. It doesn't tend to have that kind of longevity, though. She's a very, very lucky woman. And so many awesome other very, very things. I have a huge crush on her. Anyway, so you're thinking about going into this, sort of plan out, here's about how long I want to do this and the kinds of things that I think I would be comfortable doing and the kinds of jobs that I might want to get after this and how I might transition into those jobs, which, you know, clearly that last part I didn't think about very well because I'm still going, how do I merge my identities or separate my identities in this kind of way? But to just make a plan and know that your plan is going to change. You know, I started out with, well, I'm not going to do any kind of spread legged stuff. I'm not going to have sex with anybody on camera. Then I have done that. I've done that. But I checked that very deliberately. Oh, do I feel like doing that with this person at this time? And when the answer was yes, I did it. And there will be times that you will exceed your limits, as I have done a couple times, and that will feel bad. But forgive yourself for that and go, okay, that was a mistake. Let's not do that again. Ooh, and financial planning is very important as well, because you don't want it to be the end of the month and you've spent all of your money, because freelancers, you got to figure for that and then go, well, shit, now I have to do a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't want to do because I need to make rent. So it requires... It's funny, you know, a lot of people get into this because they need the money or they need something, or, you know, in a very short-term kind of way. But to be successful, you need to transition that short-term thinking into the long-term thinking. And the most successful people in the industry I know did do that.
Right on. Cool. So I want to thank Isabel Wren. This has been super fascinating conversation.
Oh, good.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Check out Isabel on all of the social medias. Apparently, she likes Twitter. And it's WREN, in case you're curious about that. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good day. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Simmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Simmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithsimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Simmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Simmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithsimmery. Thank you for listening to Sex with Simmery. Sex with Simmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithsimmery.com, Sex with Simmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.